Hello, hello, hello. Auto adjust recording
setting.
Okay. All right, so we'll start the work session here. We've got it's pretty full. First on the agenda tonight, we have the Radisson Grove residents requesting the board consider an adoption of the streets in their development. I'm assuming the residents are here. Okay, all right. If there's someone here, if you have a spokesperson that you're speaking through, maybe we'll have you start off the discussion.
Sure.
Okay.
Come on up and join us.
Thank you.
Have a seat.
We have copies for everyone as well of the petition that we provided.
Thank you.
My name is Lisa Kelly Russo. I'm a resident of River Grove and representing the River Grove residents in our request to have the roads dedicated to the town. We've got 14, I think at least 14 of the residents that have come tonight to in support of the request. So back in September of 2016, I had conversations with the town supervisor, the town highway department, the town engineer, and the tax collector. In what pursuit we could do to turn these roads over. So just to give you some education, River Grove is a development in Radisson with a private HOA established in 2007 by the developer Paul Fowler, consisting of 44 home lots, and there is a map within that package as well as common areas. Currently there are 14 homes in River Grove Trail and Hickory Knoll Lane. Originally, the development was set up as a private community. Unfortunately, over the past couple years, it hasn't maintained that status in the sense of had common areas and sidewalks, and the developer has since handed those back over to the community. So in concept, that was the reason, I think, for the private roads. We're seeking consideration to have the roads turned back over, and part of those considerations are the highway tax assessments. We're all taxpayers of the town and county. At first it was believed that we weren't paying taxes, but we are. We also maintain a fairly high tax assessment for the value of the homes. On average, our homes collectively today are over $5 million in assessments from the homes and the residents. Part of it is the road construction. The roads in River Grove were recently repaved with top coat and are in great condition to transition over to the town. While we understand that there were some guidelines at the time, it certainly seemed collectively that this should have probably never been a private road community based on the size. We have residents of all varying age groups. It was originally kind of set up to be more of an empty nester type of community with the homeowner association. Since then, we have young families, and based on that, we also have some homeowners with emergency needs from critical medical needs who require road maintenance to ensure that the emergency responders, medical delivery, have access to the residents. We also have school-aged children, so buses come in and out of our development on a daily basis. So first and foremost, from obviously a safety and security situation, we want to make sure that the road maintenance is an important factor. So from a timing standpoint, we submitted this request back in October of 2016 for consideration. We had 100% of the homeowners sign the petition. About half of the development today is developed, and those are the private roads. There's another section of the development today that's not developed. But we feel that this is a good time for us to raise our interest to have the roads dedicated. So that is our request, is to have the consideration. Also part of the assessment are some of the neighboring communities that have similar road structures, size, and again, we understand that when it was first built that it was deemed a private road and had different structural concept. Since then, I understand some of the rules have changed around curbing and different things. So I'm happy to answer any questions around anything maybe I didn't cover, but everything is included in the package.
Tom,
Tony, is there a precedent for adopting a private road and bringing it over to the town, making it a, do we have a precedent like that in the town?
I don't know as though we've done any, but there's not necessarily a restriction unless the road doesn't conform to the town.
So that's what I'm wondering, is I'm wondering if we've done this before, if we've had private roads that the town has adopted.
Not that I'm aware of.
Do you think Al would be aware of that?
Well,
I'm just curious what we've done historically.
If Lisa's presented, I thought that we should bring Al in from an infrastructure standpoint and give us a briefing on maybe the history of the area as you know it from an infrastructure point of view. Why don't you come on over?
So I actually brought the few pages from the contract, the road pages specifically for the contract drawings with me so the board can see them. So our standard road at this point in time is a 12-foot travel lane with a 1-foot asphalt kick-up. These roads, the main entrance road was developed with 11-foot travel lanes and what they show is a 1-foot 6-inch kick-up, but when you go out and measure it, it's only a 1-foot kick-up. So they are slightly narrower than our typical standard, and the actual geometry is quite tighter than what we would normally allow, specifically on Hickory Knoll Lane, where all the existing homes are. Specifically, this turn here with a narrow road, and that road section is actually even narrower. That's at 20-foot wide with travel lanes and 1-foot kickups. We cannot navigate this 90-foot radius curve and maintain two-way traffic with our current plow equipment. On top of that, the setback lines are significantly narrower than what we would allow on town front roads. This is one of many areas of Radisson that have private roads. Private roads are allowed in PUDs in the town. This is nothing new. In some ways, these homeowners are more protected than many of the other residents that live on private roads in that they actually have a homeowners association that assesses and collects dues to maintain the roads for them. All of the other private roads in Radisson, it's the homeowners get together to pay for maintenance from a plowing, wintertime maintenance standpoint and paving standpoint.
Does the town have right-of-ways off these?
We do not. We do have drainage easements and sanitary sewer easements. We don't own any of the property. The right-of-way is actually held by the homeowner association, the right-of-way parcel.
There's some new developments that have been since built off of,
yep.
And from a radius standpoint, what we're trying to show is some comparable properties and roads that are similar, because I've been met with a couple different exceptions, radius, width, size, and all that. And so I want to make sure that we have the same consideration, because those roads at the new development, River Point, have been and are being taken over, I understand, by the town.
Yep. And they were inspected when they were built, mm-hmm. and they were built to the town standards from a geometric and section standpoint.
Okay, so when you mention the radius piece mm-hmm. of it, you're saying that meets requirements of a two-way
It meets, so we have from a cul-de-sac standpoint, we do allow a slightly tighter radius, but you don't have a true cul-de-sac. You actually have a loop,
mm-hmm.
and you also have shorter setback distance from the road with the actual homes.
Where is that radius on here?
Here.
That it?
That's it.
There's three homes inside that loop. So.
Yep.
This hasn't been developed yet.
That is a piece. That's the only piece that has been developed.
That's not true. There's 14
entrance
homes.
Road. Yeah, the entrance road and that loop.
Yep, there's 14 homes starting from the beginning all the way around the loop, correct. It's the tulip side that hasn't yet been and has access over onto...
Are those roads in?
Mm-mm.
Yep.
Oh.
Nope. But they're part of the broader, again, I would assume when those are developed, they'll probably not, meet the private road. You guys will probably require...
No, actually, the contract drawings are all approved for that. The whole development is private roads.
Okay. They haven't been put in, so I understood they had to be resubmitted.
No, they don't. I mean, the contract drawings are they'll have to re-come in for preliminary plat approval again in front of the planning board. But the as far as if the developer wanted to build them today, he could build them today.
Okay. The other thing is that we have residents with children, so buses are using this for public roads, and I also understand that there's a certain that they're not supposed to be allowed on public roads or the private roads.
Yeah, I don't know if they should be. All the other private roads in Radisson, buses do not enter. So why the school district is coming into your development, I can't answer that question.
Well, it's a very large. Obviously, there's 44 homes. It's not a private road in per se to the rest of Radisson. They have 3-4 homes on it. This is a full development. But the other thing is I understand that there's a distance that children aren't supposed to be able to walk farther than, and this is farther than, should they not be allowed to have the buses come in. But we have all kinds of public transport, or, you know, accessing our development. It's not a private road like a shared driveway like the rest of the communities. This is a full development. So, again, from the safety aspect of it, what we understand is that they had different guidelines at that time. What mm-hmm. we're asking for is either an exception or an evaluation to send these to have these reconsidered. We have had them repaved recently. Hopefully someone inspected those. I had requested that back in May that somebody come and take a look at it, because I don't know how long it's been since someone's been there. But we understand there's exceptions. We just want to understand what can be done to have this further considered.
When you say you understand there are exceptions, mm-hmm. where?
So I was told that originally there was a curbing issue, that there were certain curbs, but that has since changed since the 2007 when these were put in, that they now accept these
asphalt tip-ups.
Asphalt tip-ups.
We don't require the concrete value gutter anymore.
So before that, I was told that was the case. The other thing was I was told that the radius was too tight to bring a truck through, which there are, in Radisson, there are at least 7 other circular cul-de-sacs that have a tighter radius. So again, we are a one-way in and out development at this point in time. So this isn't a through traffic like other roads. So again, if a plow can access it, it isn't a two-way neighborhood. There's only one way to access in and out.
So, you know, at ground level, mm-hmm. there's nothing but empathy that I can say I feel for you. But at 5,000 feet, if you just, you know, step back from this thing, what's kind of frightening here is a precedent that you're asking to be established in this town. There are developments and communities throughout the town that have private roads in them. Mm-hmm. So at what point and where and how do you draw the line? And guys, what's also going through my mind is the winking and nodding that may be going on for future development in our community. The CLUP requires that an R40 development owns the roads. If developers find out that we will change our minds, that the board may be willing to change its mind down the road, they may be building developments in an R40, winking and nodding, and telling homeowners, all you got to do is petition the town board and they'll take over those roads at some point. So I'm worried about a precedent here. And originally, this was the deal. This was the community that was established, and as it was established throughout the town of Lysander, where community said, you know what, we want private roads, and if you don't want school buses there, then you got to call up the school, Baldwinsville School.
No, we want school buses. Well, okay. Those are our residents.
The other option is they got to walk to an intersection.
Yeah,
exactly. But I think it exceeds the distance for normal pickup. I spoke to somebody in the town about what that they measured it and said it exceeded the distance for the children to walk. This is a beautiful community with very happy homeowners. We weren't part of the development of it, but what we're asking for is consideration as taxpayers to consider, because we are paying taxes for roads that aren't being maintained, nor is the aesthetics of the community from its original conception.
But you're paying taxes for roads you are using.
And just like people that live on state roads and county roads in the town pay a highway tax as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you use town roads to get to your development.
48.
I understand. The highway department supervisor told us that we weren't paying taxes, and I went to the assessor and confirmed that we were. So just to understand, I've been met with a lot of objections. We're just trying to have someone make a fair and reasonable assessment based on the homeowner's request.
So why don't you like it the way it is? the setup right now? What's the downside to you right now?
The downside to us is that our roads aren't maintained by the town of Lysander, so we don't have the regular ability to have pass-through when the snow comes, as well as the long-term maintenance of these roads. This is not a driveway. This is a 44-home development that several have shared should have never been passed as a private community. So to your point, I think we're just requesting the fact that this was probably a mistake a while ago. It was approved, and now we have residents in there. And this was approved, obviously, for residents. But it's a sizable development that I think what we're just seeking is a fair consideration, hopefully not just opinions, but actually an assessment to say, is it possible that the town could take these over? We're talking about a foot here. We're talking about a radius here. It's just have an honest assessment.
Help me out. If we consider to take this over, what reasons would we give not to take over every single private road in the town of Lysander?
With all due respect, I don't live in the rest of the community. You would assess each one on its own merit, but this is a 44-home development. It's not three or four.
Yeah.
So that's the difference.
Is there anything that we could do to this development to bring it up, or is there anything that could be done in order to make this a little bit more?
I wouldn't recommend that the town spend any money to bring the roads to standard. Unfortunately, because a lot of the houses are built, to revise the geometry at this point in time is not possible without, encroaching onto outside of what is the HOA right away, or even losing a house or two. So that's really not an option at this point in time.
Is there anything the Homeowners Association there can do then to bring this closer up to speed?
In my opinion would be this would, just because of exactly what Bob said, and because it wasn't inspected when the roads were constructed, I would say it would be ill-advised for the board to accept these. But that's from an engineering standpoint and a construction standpoint, and it's the board's discretion on how they want to handle it.
So a couple things. Bob makes a great point. You know, we're according to this the club, we are trying to what this town is trying to do. Actually, this would be the antithesis of what we're trying to accomplish for our road infrastructure maintenance plan. I mean, we would be
take a minute to explain why.
Okay, so the club. Our land use
AR 40 development.
This is a tighter density development. But there's a couple things. Normally, when we accept a road from a developer, the roads are up to our standards. This is not, and there's a safety concern that sticks out in my mind, and that's the fact that the turning radiuses won't allow for a plow to do its job in the winter safely, and that. That could be a daily occurrence. That's the first thing that sticks out as a safety concern. The other thing is this board is charged with a fiduciary responsibility of making sure that all residents are considered in anything that we do. And for the rest of the residents that live in the town, we would be basically placing a burden on the residents to maintain a private road, to take over a private road. Even though there is, how many homes in there now that are
14 currently?
There's 14 currently. Mm-hmm. Maybe close to a third is occupied, and we don't know how long it would take to sell these other homes. So, it unfortunately, in my mind, comes down to a safety issue. And even if we could change the roads, it would be the HOA's responsibility to bring those up to standard, and
to standard without destructive testing.
Right, so what we would do is we would actually bore through the road, we would do things to, mm-hmm. and it would be all over the roads because we'd want to make sure that it was consistent from one point to the other. That would be destructive to the roads, and I just, And I think I was very upfront with you when we first spoke that this would be a big ask for the town. And I certainly sympathize with the residents that, you know, you have this large private road and it's in your hands to maintain. But for that reason, it's difficult for me to consider absorbing those roads and put that responsibility on the backs of the taxpayers, the rest of the taxpayers in the town.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you discussed is the taxes that we're currently paying and how much over time. And, you know, we're hoping to have that assessment because, again, the average home value is higher than the average, you know, for the town of Lysander. So we're paying our taxes on it. But there would be an assessment from the assessor standpoint of how much the costs we would be contributing to those costs. Again, I committed, as well as the homeowners, that we wanted to pursue and have this considered in a fair manner, you know, to have it tested if possible. If there's other home, you know, areas that have closer, there seems to be a lot of examples. We just want ours assessed and considered for the safety of our residents as well, so that emergency responders can be able to get in. Our children are safe. Buses and every, you know, public vehicles are accessing this because it certainly doesn't look like a private road. And there's new developments that have the same or less of some of the same considerations that have been taken over. River Point, right across the road from ours, is a great example. So, again, we know that it may not meet. We're not engineers. We're just homeowners that would like this considered. So, if there's a testing or something that can be done, we would be happy to wait the time to have that done.
How are you currently clearing your roads? Do you contract out?
Contract with ProScapes. Yep, we pay a monthly assessment for that. Mm-hmm. So it's a contract actually with the Homeowners Association and the developer. Mm-hmm. We don't individually contract it out.
Who paved the top coat?
The developer did. And that was just done in August. Mm-hmm.
Was that the final top coat?
Yeah, that was final.
So that was just the final course application?
Yes.
Okay. That wasn't a re...
No, that was over binder that had been sat open for 9 years.
Have we looked at how much road this is, just for discussion?
It's 10 plus 24, so we're 300 plus, 315 plus... foot that way and back to 2900, so 1200, about 1500 feet of road
that exists right now.
Yeah, 1520 or so.
So 1500 feet. So just to give you an example, so down the road, and that wasn't meant to be a
pun.
Eventually this road would require a mill and fill, where we would go in and we'd take that top course off and we'd reapply another. What we need to consider here is the cost of doing the taxes that are generated in the community don't generate enough money for us to justify considering that within your development. If this was an instance where, you know, it was a break even, you know, maybe, but it's a huge request.
Well, that's why we thought it was a good time to actually request this, is because the expense has just been made to put the top coat in, right? We're not coming to you going, oh, we need a new road next year. It's been done. So we thought that the timing was good to at least build that equity, if you want to call it that, up before the next thing would need to be done.
Okay. All right, well, so the board's heard this. Do you want further discussion on this? Do you want to keep this on the agenda as a work session item? Or would you like to let these folks know your thoughts and whether or not you're willing to consider the...
I wish there was something we could do. I definitely understand where you guys are coming from. I'm concerned we could create a precedent. Bob brought up a great point. And we have a lot of private areas in the community. And I could see more coming, too, with incentive zoning and with the way we're reorganized the club, that if something isn't done with AR 40, I have concerns from a long-term perspective, not necessarily here, but in other areas.
So and to get back to Al's request that we explain the AR 40 thing. So in this town, there are incentive zones where you can build higher, you can have higher density, and if you negotiate a community benefit. AR 40, if you build an AR 40 development, the residents in that AR 40 have to maintain their own infrastructure. So they'd be basically in your position a little worse off, because your development has probably a higher density than an AR 40. Or you can go cluster, where you can build twice as many homes and half the amount of property. Or you can just do infill along any farm to market road, such as Patchett Road. So to Bob's point, if we start adopting private roads now, then it might encourage developers to do those AR40 developments, thinking that, oh, someday there's going to be a sympathetic board and the town's just going to take over those roads, take over the maintenance for those roads. So that's, I don't know if that helps explain our position.
Yeah.
And what we need to consider when we're asked.
And the big picture is trying to protect this town financially. So what the analysis we do for any new development is that development has to pay for itself forever.
Mm-hmm.
And communities across this country have just built willy-nilly, thinking that, you know, all these new tax dollars are coming in initially, and there are, right? Because there's no infrastructure to maintain. You don't have to take care of the roads. You don't have to take care of the sewers. You don't have to take care of any of that stuff. And then what we're finding out is then year 15, year 20, year 25, the costs not only catch up, but the income coming in, the tax dollars coming in, but they exceed them. So what we're trying to do in 2017 is make sure that every decision that's made is going to protect this town 50 years from now. So the taxpayers, all of us, are saying, how are we going to pay for all of this? They don't have to say, how are we going to pay for all of this? Which is what other communities are finding themselves boxed in right now. They don't have the income coming in through tax dollars to pay for all of the things they've committed to. And those are basic things. Roads. Schools. So it's hard. I mean, this is tough stuff. But it's not fun to look you in the eye and say, you know,
I mean, we're here to help, you know. But that's our first instinct is to try to find a way to. But this is a difficult.
And that's why my first question was if there was a precedent, mm-hmm. if there was something that had happened previously that would allow us to go down that road. But I don't want this to be the precedent that creates that.
I mean, I'm happy to do even more research if that's. You know, I don't know about any that have been. I'm happy to look into it. We've, like I said, I've been met with several obstacles in trying to show that there's other instances within.
You're definitely paying taxes, so I'm sorry that was a response that you got.
Oh, no, that was the easy one.
Yeah, you're definitely paying.
That was the easy one. I don't know if any of the other residents have any other comments.
I have one comment. I know this is one particular instance where we're talking about revenue and tax revenue from homeowners. That an individual I've known for many, many years, a Radisson resident, decided to downsize, sold a big home, and wanted to buy in River Grove. And he was down the signing line with the builder, and he heard about the road. He said, I'm not doing it. He left Radisson totally, went to an entirely different community because of their road situation. Well, there's a taxpayer. They wanted to live in River Grove, but could not do it because he wasn't comfortable with their own situation. And that's one instance I know of where we lost a resident in River Grove because of that situation. Now, how many other residents were there that heard about that, potential residents, that decided they weren't going to do it? And that's a major tax base. We have a pretty heavy tax load over there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I just wanted to mention that because that's one instance I know, exact instance. How many other ones were there? I don't know.
Well, again, it's just the consideration that probably if this was set out today, it probably never would have been approved as a private road. So we're asking for, you know, to reconsider based on the timing of the new top coat being put on and its condition, you know, is in a positive one to hand it over. So we wanted to explore it as residents and as taxpayers, as we feel that it was probably a mistake quite a while ago. So
just for my benefit, and maybe Al, do you know, when was this approved?
I believe the actual subdivision approval was 2006.
Yeah, I had 2007. It was probably within that time.
I think 2007 was when the sewers and drainage was dedicated to the town. 2006, I believe, is when that.
I mean, just a word to the wise, and I'm not trying to tell the planning board how to do their business, but, you know, if these kinds of things come up and you know, and then a decade later, you know, you were going to hear from...
I think there was actually litigation on this one.
What do you mean?
I believe the planning board said no, and there was litigation between the developer and the planning board.
So the planning board said no about the private roads.
There was private roads. Private roads are allowed in a PUD. It's the bottom line. By our town code, you can construct private roads in a planned unit development, which is what Radisson is.
All right. So we find ourselves like between a rock and a hard place on that one. You know, it's allowed by law, but then, you know, 10 years later, everybody says, well, what did we do this for? We don't want to own these roads.
Yeah.
It's like, that's just...
expensive. Yeah.
So, and I don't blame the homeowners. Yeah. I wouldn't want to own a stretch of road like this.
Well, just for my knowledge, is there an occupancy that would allow us to then come back for further consideration? Because I know you mentioned the tax dollars as part of the concern. Is there a point, because I think there's 19 lots in our section and 14 have homes on it. Is there a point that if you just say if this is full, you know, becomes 100% occupied, it would be a reconsideration?
The answer has to be no to that, because that's not what the plan was. The plan that the developer put forth that Al just explained was, let me build my community, I'll create an HOA, and the homeowners will pay for the road. That's what was said. That's what was.
And he said, if you don't allow me, mm-hmm. they're going to take you to court.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it sounds like, and I haven't looked up the minutes of the planning board, but it sounds like the planning board was hesitant or did not want to approve this at all.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because of a possible meeting that might take place in the town offices 10 or 15 years from now, talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And what's difficult here is to find the criteria that would say, you know what, this development is different than the one over there that's got 7 homes, or the one over there that's got 13 homes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're going to be able to do that, because an HOA, I mean, a PUD is a PUD, and whether it's 7 homes, 13 homes, 14 homes. So you approve this, guaranteed, there will be attorneys showing up at the town saying, approve this one too, because you just approved that one. There's no difference.
We
won't make it a final decision tonight. Mm-hmm. We'll respond to you in writing with a letter, and we'll give you a list of our considerations.
Sure.
So let us sit on this. I thank you all for coming in.
Thank you.
I completely understand the position. So thanks for coming in. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Supposed to be.
Yeah. I just want to, things at Spray Park.
Tony's here.
Okay, why don't you do Spray Park, Blue Ridge Circle, Radisson, Flood Study Special Drainage District, Indian Springs Drainage Easements. I'm paving, and cover those, and I hopefully we'll be back by the end of that.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm familiar with all this stuff, so.
Okay. Joe, we may want to add, it's up to you, we don't have to do it tonight, but I took a look at the contract for snowplow for the county.
Yep.
Do you want to put that on the agenda, or we can do it next meeting?
I do next meeting.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Okay. I do have one in case I get caught and blow a tire or something. Keith Ewald. If I could add him to the agenda, we'll make the announcement before, as we go into the next meeting, as an appointment to planning board. Jack and I sat and interviewed some candidates, and the strongest candidate that we've seen is Keith Ewald. So I'll have that on for consideration.
Do we have any bio from him?
Yeah.
Or a resume or something?
Yeah, I'll get you that. Okay, Jack, when do you meet again? When's your next meeting?
14th of July.
Of July. All right, so why don't we just hold off on that?
Sure. Please. Yeah.
Okay. You could do it your first meeting in July.
Okay.
What order do you want to attack those?
Yeah.
Let Tony go first.
Okay. Then,
he said 14th. I guess. Yeah, 13th. Second Thursday, whichever day.
Spray Park update.
So we've had put a committee together. We have five people sitting on our committee right now. We met twice, and I just want to bring the board up to speed of kind of what's going on. We've talked about fees. The committee felt that it was a good idea to collect fees. They were thinking in the lines of a dollar a person, non-walking infants for free. Should the spray park be staffed? They were thinking yes, it should be supervised. Obviously Camillus is not, but they felt that ours should be, one for safety reasons, cleaning reasons, and you know, in case of weather related things like that, especially if we're going to be charging, they felt a staff would be necessary. Hours of operation right now, they feel 9 to 9, which are our park hours, and then we can gauge the park and set hours how they feel, weather permitting, and as the season goes, of what our peak hours would be. But to start off, we would do 9 to 9.
I think 9 o'clock at night is pretty late.
It is, but
maybe
in the summertime,
or eight.
In the summer, no.
In the peak time of the season, when you're right now, I mean, when you're talking July and September, it doesn't get dark till like 9:30, quarter after nine. So. Right now, that's what they're thinking.
Okay.
That's what our hours of operation are 9 to dusk, 9 to 9. So that's what they were thinking of hours. Hmm. And we can adjust that as it goes.
I'm just thinking about staffing, that's all. So I mean, if we're gonna have somebody there from 9 in the morning until 9 at night, that's all.
I'm just kind of filling you in what they did, but we can definitely, and I can get your guys' feedback to bring back to them. That's kind of what right now of what this is about. If there's something I, you know, come across or you have any feedback, I'd be happy to share. We're going to meet with them again Monday the 19th at 6:30, right outside the office there in the large group room. The biggest concern that they had was the changing areas. They would like to take out of the 6 changing areas and try to get 3 changing areas and 3 bathrooms added for people so that they're not using the public bathrooms. They feel with the overflow of a pavilion use, maybe a field use and playgrounds and all that, that a separate bathroom would be nice to have with the changing rooms, just strictly for the spray park. Talking with Tim, the codes, and with Al, we meet what we need for adequate bathroom use. So it's kind of what your feelings are on it. The committee feels that having a couple extra bathrooms wouldn't hurt if we're going to build this.
It may not hurt, but what did you just add to the price tag?
About $20,000 a stall, and we would go from a duplex pump station to a triplex pump station. A duplex maximum you want to see is 7 restrooms or facilities on a duplex in a commercial setting. So we would trigger the need for a separate, a third pump.
And I will bring all that information to our meeting on Monday.
Right, but I'm not going to hold you to it, Al. But you're talking about a new restroom building facility, right?
No, we would do modifications to that pavilion that we currently show with the 6 changing areas. We would do modifications to that to have a frost wall and enclosed bathrooms, water service to the building.
But if I had to guess, another $100,000 to the
pump? About $20,000 install, plus about $5,000 for the pump, so you're about $65,000 to do the three bathrooms. And that's...
By my understanding...
That's Spartan bathrooms. No luxuries there. That's straight concrete floor with polyvinyl chloride walls. It would do under-sink, on-demand hot water. Pretty Spartan facilities.
And for something like this, that's what it should be. So you can go in there and hose it out.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they'd have to be ADA compliant as well. So you'd have to have ADA bars.
Okay.
As far as the pump, when we go and get off our sewer, we're going to have to get a pump anyways to connect into the sewer line. It was just, we'd have to get a bigger pump. So, nothing is set for that yet. I mean, so those numbers would be tied into when we connect into the village sewer. But that was, I just wanted to fill you in kind of with the thinking of the committee. The next meeting, we're going to talk about a little bit about spray features, budgeting, and how to generate some revenue off of the spray park, either selling ads or selling sponsorships and things like that to try to get some extra money for that. So that's where we are right now. I just wanted to kind of throw that and keep the spray park in front of you guys. We have been meeting. We have been talking about things. Is there anything that you guys want me to bring back for my meeting on Monday?
I got a couple things. So the actual spray area that we have right now, from talking to the vendor, is sized for approximately 70 children. And our current bathroom capacity is 150 boys and 120 girls. So we have capacity for 270 people, which would appear to be by code, by New York State and International Building Code, would be adequate for the number of people we expect for the spray ground and what we typically see on a busy weekend with the pavilions running. So we would be in compliance 99% of the time, unless we had some big event going on, and that would be something that we'd want to consider, maybe bringing in some porta-johns temporarily if we had large events going on.
You're saying we're in compliance without the addition?
Without the addition, yes.
And the one thing I would just mention is, so Monday through Sunday, 9 in the morning until 9 at night, it's a lot of hours that we're going to be...
It's weather permitting, and it's also, dealing with time fluctuations too. So I mean, right now during the peak of the season it would be 9 to 9. At the start of the season until the end of the season it probably wouldn't be that.
Roman, I would throw out, and I think Tony might be thinking the same way, that's the easiest thing to change. If all of a sudden you see attendance drop off at 8 o'clock at night every night, like there's nobody here, well then you change the hours the next
right.
season.
Right.
I just don't want this committee to think that
the sun is up high in the sky and it's warm.
Exactly.
And nobody's showing up until 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Right. Like a night of Shores and Jameson. When do they shut down? Do you know? They're open till like around 8, I think. Yeah, I think 8. I mean, but
and I think Camillus is 8 too.
I think 9. I agree with Roman, but let's not quibble over 8 or 9 o'clock at this point. I think the biggest thing now is do we want to charge an admission price? I wish it would stop using the word fee, but it's an admission price to get in. That's a big one.
I have concerns with it, but if we're going to have somebody that we're staffing there, which I don't know, I mean, Bob, you have experience running parks, but I'm not really convinced that it's a great idea that we have somebody there all the time. I mean, why is it necessary? Why do we need somebody there?
One, for security reasons. Two, the fact that if we were to charge to have somebody collect the dues or the price of admission.
If we aren't going to have somebody there, I would strongly recommend not to collect anything.
Right, and it's, so, again, this is the advisory committee is just to bring forth ideas and right. put it out in front of you guys. Ultimately, you guys will make the decision to move forward on it, or
just help. I don't know your operation, so just walk me through a typical summer day. That you've got what, a staff person in the office there?
We have a part-time staff person, yes.
And that's basically it in the park,
right?
And without an extra person, what's got to be going?
Well, we have two. Are you talking the park or the office?
The park.
Okay, at the park, we have.
If I showed up at the park, you know, after school lets out with my grandkids,
we have two full-time seasonal employees who do the landscaping, the mowing, all the general upkeep of the park.
So they're doing all of that maintenance work, and that keeps them busy all day long, pretty
right,
much.
Right. Right.
And so then there's really no person.
No recreational staff.
There's no recreational staff there.
But Mary does get paid to stop doing what she's doing and attend to maybe a person or somebody or delivery to go and make sure that, you know, if they need something or check on them.
But to ask that same person, Mary or whoever it is, to have this added burden of looking over at the spray park.
Right.
There's sanitation issues, I think, is a big thing. I mean, somebody lets their toddler go in without a swim diaper on, and their swim diaper explodes. That's a...
It would be an extra
health issue.
So what does Eric say he does? He doesn't staff it. How does he get away without staffing it up in Camillus, Tony?
Every morning they just have one of their guys go in and clean it, and that's it.
Does he have a similar staffing operation like you have? Have you spoken to him about
this? Not the staffing, but they have multiple parks, so they have multiple guys.
No, I know, but in that park, have you spoken to him about what he does?
No, I have not.
Can you do that?
Yep.
Can you make sure, I'd like you to have that frank conversation mm-hmm. with him, saying, you know, Eric, what are you doing here? I mean, you've got, what happens from 9 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night? My intuition says you need a person, you need another person, a summer person, not a full-time staff person, helping you out here for, as Al says, sanitary, whatever, but just to kind of be on the lookout.
Yeah, and we're talking like maybe a young kid, minimum wage kind of job, okay. You know,
but it's still $8,000.
Yes, I mean, because you're probably going to have two, not just one, you know.
Because you have to stagger them, you mean?
Yep, and then if you're doing weekends and things like that,
right.
So... You're right in the ballpark of what you'd have to pay.
Well,
them.
That's per person. So you're talking about $14,000-$15,000 between two people, I would think. I don't know.
And you're going to need somebody on reserve, because what happens if somebody's sick or they're out of town?
Yeah,
so you're just we're increasing again.
That's why you want to charge admission.
So you
COVID
and
costs.
How would you charge the admission to them?
We would have a little station or a little window where they would pay their dollar or whatever the admission fee would be, the price of getting in. And right now we're asking a dollar to help offset any cost of maybe water or staffing.
The response is going to be, look at all the money I pay in taxes already, and now you're charging me an admission fee in order to get into a park that I'm already paying tax dollars for.
But this is going to be...
This is going to be bringing in
people outside too, as well.
$100,000 in equipment and put it out there.
You want to make sure it's safe.
You turn your head and just walk away.
And it's a lot more than $100,000. I mean, we're talking there's $280,000 in equipment just in the spray ground, and that's not including the other amenities that go along with it. I mean, this is.
I'm not saying it's the worst idea ever. I just want you guys to think about this, because initially these are my initial concerns. So.
There's a little irony here, though, because if you charge an admission price to get in, you have to assign a staff person to collect it. So that staff person is useless when it comes to anything else you want them to do at the spray park. So it's like, that's a paradox. So I guess I would ask you to explore, is there any innovative way to charge to get in without assigning a whole staff person from 9 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night to do it? Because what you don't have that person to clean up the diaper or to take care of a rowdy situation. They can't leave their admission window and closed, be back in 10 minutes to go attend to something. So is there another way of doing it? Can people buy wristbands through a vending machine? Can they Beaver Lake doesn't staff their entrance, because you pay on the way out at Beaver Lake. There's an entrance, there's an exit gate. I'm not saying to do that, because that's for cars, but But are there imaginative ways of charging to get in without assigning a staff person to do it? And I don't know if there are, Tony. I'm asking you to explore that.
Yep.
Can you buy a season pass? I think that might be your ticket. You know, buy a season pass that, or a week pass. Every week the color changes, and you can buy them at the office ahead of time, or you can buy them anyway. You can come here and buy them. I want you to think about that. Because I want you to have the staff person that can do something in the park for you, as opposed to selling just admission.
I mean, I don't think it's going to be crazy enough where, like, if something happened where they needed a clean up or something, that you couldn't put a sign and be like, be back in a second, you know, to go and attend to something.
Yeah, think about it.
So
you don't know. I mean, you just
don't. I mean, this is all new ground.
And that person is sitting behind that window, Tony, on a slow day doing absolutely nothing.
Right.
That's the other side. They're doing nothing because nobody's buying stuff. So, but they were paying them. They're behind that window.
I will bring it to them on Monday and talk about that.
You might even talk to some of your peers in the CMY RPS.
A lot of people that I've talked to are very curious of how we're going to do it, because I think a lot of people want to piggyback off of this.
Sure.
So, I mean, We're trying something new, because Camillus went one way, we're going another way. If we are to staff it and to charge a price to get in. So, I mean, there's...
You know, I'm just being ridiculous here, but when you go downtown and you park your car on a city street, you don't have to go up to a person to get a sticker to put on your window. They have vending machines selling stickers to put on your car window. I'm just asking you to think imaginatively about how can you sell an admission thing without having a person doing it.
Right. Yeah, I can definitely explore that.
But the way I'm suggesting you explore it is not through just your committee. Go on the internet, talk to other folks in the recreation field, recreation professionals. Maybe you have to buy a vending machine that spews out, that can take credit cards. I don't know.
Right, and they have those. I mean, one of the things that we were talking about is if somebody was at and taking that, we could sell, you know, food or drinks or ice cream, snacks, things like that. Mm-hmm. And having, maybe if we don't have somebody, we do have vending machines that can feel that need. So those were all brought up.
That's great.
So that, like, again, like I said, the next meeting we'll talk a little bit about design. If we are going to go with a theme, if we're not going to go with a theme, what fits the park and that kind of, we don't want something that's going to be tacky at the park. We want something that's going to fit what we already have up there. And we're also going to talk about, you know, how do we go after these big sponsors or, you know, people to give money and help us with that. If it's putting nameplates on certain spray features, is it doing signage? Is it selling benches? Because we want adequate seating for everybody. So we're going to talk about exploring some of those ideas at our next meeting too.
Great.
When's your next meeting?
Is Monday the 19th at 6:30. All right. Thank you guys for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Big Al.
All right. Let's rip through this. Discussion for action regarding Blue Ridge Circle 370 speed issues. Got a request from a homeowner. Apparently there's been three accidents at the intersection of Blue Ridge Circle and Ashington Drive in the past year. You'll see a resolution on the agenda requesting a speed study from the New York State DOT. I wrote it up as we want the speed study from Dunham Road to Emmerich Road. When we were discussing this, one of the things Jack Corey brought up to me was, you know, they have the same issue at the exits and entrances to Seneca Estates. Is it appropriate to go even further west than this, even though we've only had one formal request for the residents at Blue Ridge Circle and Ashington Drive? Do we want to take care of this in one fell swoop, or do we want to leave it at this, see what they come back with, and then ask for another request?
I share the concern. I mean, and this goes back to working at Beaver Lake Nature Center in the 1980s, turning off from Mud Lake Road.
I was going to say, I think you'd have to, I was just going to look, I think East Mud Lake is the next road west, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And, but what are they going to do? They're not going to turn 370 into a 40-mile-an-hour
road. They just totally rebuilt 370.
When I was talking with Al, when they widened the road 370, we had a number of accidents out there. We asked the state at that time to do a speed study. This was 12 years ago when they widened it. And they did a speed study on 370. And what they concluded is that with the improvements they had made to the road, and the existing posted speed limits were very safe for that road. The problem is not the speed limit. The problem is how people drive on the road. Nobody follows the speed limit.
That, and specifically for the Blue Ridge Circle Ashington Drive, there's that sag vertical curve just west.
Exactly.
So if you look quick to the right when you're turning left out of Ashington or turning right out of Blue Ridge Circle and there's a car in that sag vertical curve, you may not see them. And I think that is the more important concern. That's why I wrote this up as Dunham Road, because that sag vertical curve between Dunham Road and Ashington acts as a blind spot for vehicles entering 370 from that intersection. I think we have, I think we have a better shot of the DOT doing something if we limit it to Dunham Road. Because right after Emmerich, it goes to 40, is it 40 or 45 there? It drops down right after...
I think it's
east?
50.
Yeah, going east?
Yeah, but is it 45 or 50?
I think it's 50.
It's 50 until you hit the village.
Village. It does drop. I know it drops right after Emmerich. Yes.
Well, I guess my question is, with absolute total understanding and empathy that this is a dangerous road, what is the state going to do?
Well, they do look at accidents. So if there has been 3 accidents there in the past year, that is considered in traffic studies. My guess is they may at least lower it to 50, and they may consider lowering 370 just because of the number of curb cuts all the way from Dunham to the village line down to 45.
I mean, I guess
doesn't hurt to ask, I guess.
Hurt to ask, and, you know, this reminds me of, you know, one of the issues that was, like, always on I tried to do something about it was the speed on Onondaga Lake Parkway going from Liverpool to Route 81. And the state, their position was, Bob, the road determines how fast people go, and it doesn't matter what kind of speed limit sign we put up. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, we've all been on Route 173, which has got a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit on it. Somehow that got enacted. I don't know how that happened, but it goes on for miles from Warner's Road or whatever it is, right on
all the way to Camillus.
To Camillus, and it's 35 miles an hour. It's like, are you kidding me? So, yeah, I think we should ask the state to this is, we've got more and more people living out here, commuting from Emmerich Road west to Mud Lake, or maybe Santa, and you folks need to look at this and take a look at the accidents that have happened. That would be my position. Don't stop at Dunham Road.
We're going to skip chickens until Joe gets back. Radisson Flood Study Special Drainage District. I've been keeping you guys up to breast on this. And you'll see in your agenda attachment package on page, I think it's 4 of that. Should I not put it in there?
I see this letter from you.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So we did a public interest survey after talking to Tony, Dave, and the assessor. What I'm proposing is to pay for that survey data that we needed, special assessment, a special line item on their tax bill of $264 per household.
Wow.
To cover that survey costs. Really, their taxes will still go down overall because of the reduction in assessment that the assessor gave them, because they are in a flood hazard area.
So we can just we can just do this?
Does anybody have any questions about it? The assessor's fine with it. Dave's fine with it. Tony's fine with it.
So we can just pass a resolution and do that?
Yes.
Do we want to send a letter out to the residents?
We already did.
Okay.
Yeah, we already did. Sent a letter. We sent a postcard, and we got responses back in your packet there, the list of residents with the responses.
So what is your sense in terms of the resolution of this problem?
The flood hazard area has shrunk significantly with my analysis. So
no, I know, but like, we're not the ones causing the problem.
Yes.
So are they changing their map?
Well, that's what we're asking them to do.
Right, but I mean, what's your thinking?
My gut feeling is that they're going to change their map.
These poor people, not only are they...
Yes.
But they just have to pay for this.
Yes, I mean, and quite frankly, my time that has been spent on this has not been billed back to the district. It has just been, I'll call it volunteer if you want, because I'm here way more than 40 hours a week. It's just been something that I think is worthwhile pursuing for our residents. Indian Springs drainage easements. Well, you'll also see a resolution on the agenda, resolution E and F. In the course of doing the design on that, I had a homeowner approach me and show me a survey that showed a drainage easement given to the town in between the lots of Mott Road and Mercer Street. Look at the final plat that was filed at the county for the subdivision. Doesn't show any drainage easements. So at this point in time, we have easements between houses that convey stormwater down the hill to the Seneca River. We don't have a drainage district. We have not done anything with any of those pipes that are outside of the road right away. We need to consider long-term, those pipes are going to need to be slip lined. They are. It's the bottom. I mean, right now they could be slip lined, but they're going to need to be slip lined in the future or dug up and replaced. The big problem that we have here is many people have built sheds, pools, fences in the easements because the easements don't show up in the final plat. The town took dedication of the easements after the fact. I actually had a deed research company do some research at the county clerk's office. These easements were accepted after the fact with meets and bounds descriptions and were never mapped. So permits were issued to do this work and it's in easements. This is an issue that we are going to need to, it's what delayed me in getting the final design done because I was trying to tie down exactly what our responsibilities were, and after exhaustive research, we don't have any way of paying for the infrastructure that's in these drainage easements outside of the road right away. So at this point in time, I have left them out of the design, and it is what it is. I think this is something that the board needs to be aware of, and we need to come up with a plan of action on how we're going to get this in front of these people and how we're going to handle the situation long term.
So just playing devil's advocate, why are we going ahead with the reconstruction if this issue is still outside?
We can still slip line these pipes. They're outside of the road. We don't have to do any pavement cuts to slip line these pipes after the fact. Okay. So at this point in time...
So all the work you do on the road won't be disturbed?
Correct.
Down the road.
Correct. They have shell cell short lengths and 4-foot lengths of pipe that we can take into the catch basin, slide in, and just push them down to slip line these pipes and grout the interstitial space after the fact.
There's nothing we're dealing with this reconstruction that's like, oh my God, why'd we do that?
No. There's alternative methods to slip line these afterwards.
Okay, so we don't forget after June 15, 2017, how do we keep the issue of fixing the issue on the front burner here, or do we need to?
Well, that's where I'm coming to you guys. How do we want to approach these residents? Quite frankly, they tried to, several years ago, it's my understanding, they tried to form a drainage district up there, and it was overwhelmingly voted down. People didn't want to pay the fees.
Do you remember how much the fees were proposed at that time?
I don't know, but I'm sure, just like all of our drainage districts, they were ridiculously low. They just didn't want to pay it. So we're in a situation that we're in a lousy situation. That's the bottom line. I wanted to bring it to the board's attention. We need to think about it. We need to come up with a plan of action of how we're going to do it.
There's two
ways that we can form a drainage district. We can form a drainage district by petition of the residents in the district or by order of the town board. By order of the town board is Article 7A. It's subject to permissive referendum. I highly doubt that you're going to get anybody to carry a petition, nor do I think you would get a majority of the residents to support the petition. We're in a difficult situation here. That's the bottom line, and we need to try to educate the public and try to come up with a long-term plan of how we're going to maintain this infrastructure that we technically can't spend highway money on, and we really shouldn't spend general funds on it either.
Well, Al, what I think we could do is hold a special meeting, invite these residents to attend, and then explain the situation to them and give them both options, that the town can either do it or the residents could carry a petition. And I think that it would be a fair statement that the residents should have an idea of how much, maybe it's a rough estimate, how much it would be per resident.
Yep.
And I think that if it's a fair number, people will understand. But when it's going to be thousands of dollars, I think that's what's going to scare people.
Oh, it's going to be thousands of dollars. It's going to be, because we're never going to be able to build up enough funds to do the work before, you know, the pipes get to a point where they can't be slip lined. And so we're going to be in a situation where we're going to have to do the work and bond. That's where, you know, you're approximately $30 a foot to slip line a 12-inch pipe. We'll leave it at that.
That's why we're having so much drainage problems there.
It is. I mean, it's...
So is this an anomaly in the town of Lysander, or do we have these nightmares all over the place?
We've addressed some of them in the past. We addressed Seneca Estates a few years ago. Our older developments is where we see this. Now, as far as easements, this is... This is the only one that I'm aware of that's still outstanding. I know Seneca Estates was addressed, but that was the only one that I knew of before this one. I didn't even know about this one until a homeowner brought me their survey and showed me this easement on it. And I said, geez, where did that come from? I actually spent about $60 having a title search company pull book and page numbers referenced on that easement, and then pull some additional lots where I thought there might be easements, and lo and behold, yeah, we've got easements, and they're in the town's name.
Okay, so we got a fun part of this.
So the Indian Springs, is that all of Indian Springs, or is that just specific areas?
It's all of Indian Springs. What do we want to go to next? Let's tackle West Genesee Sewer District Extension Number 2 Change Order, Resolution H. We all knew this was coming. This was the West Genesee Sewer District Extension 2. Essentially, we're doing a change order to the Contract 3 of the West Genesee Sewer District Extension 1 Equipment Purchase Contract to purchase the pumps for equipment, West Genesee Sewer District Extension 2. This number is derived from, obviously, it's been a few years since they bid the original contract. So they took the same percentage discount that they gave us when we purchased the original pumps and applied it to today's pricing, which seems fair and equitable to me. It's actually a very good price compared to what the retail list price is for these. So that's why that's on there. That's what it is. I also included the prefabricated ballast systems for this district. I think long term that is a better plan than pouring, you know, 2 or 3 yards of concrete around each one of these wet wells. If one of them ever has to be removed at some point in time in the future, having just a big lump of concrete around them makes it that much more difficult. With the prefabbed ballast systems, we can. It makes long-term maintenance costs lower.
So where does this $257,000 show up? Is it already showing up in what they're paying in the district, or is this like an add?
No, they're only adding on the 75. Yeah, and that was in the cost estimate for the.
It was already in the.
Yes, cost that's estimate. The total contract amount with the additional okay. 75,879.
So the 181,000.
That was the original contract amount, including change orders 1 and 2.
Okay. All right. So where's the 75? Is that 75?
That's from the bond that we have for West Genesee Sewer District Extension 2.
So we have the money.
Have the money, and 85% of it is reimbursed through the WQIP grant from the New York State DEC.
75% reimbursed.
85.
Oh, 85. Okay.
Asphalt. I'll pass this out. This is at the Pete requested it at the last meeting. Basically, it's just a breakdown of what costs are. We did put out a new RFP for turnkey paving after we received an unsolicited quote from Seneca Stone. We offered up that option to Barrett and Roselli as well. Just to see what the numbers were. I will say, you'll see from the middle column here, Seneca Stone gave us very good numbers. Very, very good numbers with us doing nothing. We're not hauling any material. We're not touching it. All we're doing is providing maintenance and protection of traffic in the form of flaggers. They gave us, as you can see, very, very good numbers. And like I said, that's just their unsolicited bid. The RFP quotes that I requested are due back on Monday. So we'll have a firmer handle on it.
Is there any quality difference issue with this stuff?
No, they're a DOT-approved plant, DOT-approved scales, DOT-approved materials. They are hauling out of Seneca Falls, but I've seen asphalt sit on a truck for over 2 hours and still meet temperature specs. So. The 1 hour haul out of Seneca Falls is not that big a deal. And we would be on site to inspect, and if it was out of spec, I would reject it anyway.
Why is their chipping so high?
They're chipping. Oh, you see the highlighted yellow thing on the bottom? That's fiber micro and fog line striping. That's the original vendor quote of Sucoat. It's about 97 cents more a square yard to fiber micro than it is to chip seal. But it is a much more, it would
community.
Be friendly. There you go. That's a good way to put it.
So, Al, on the bottom here, Runnymede, Fallen Timber, Sourwood.
It says
2-inch cold mix pave, but this middle column is hot mix.
Correct. Okay. But at a 2-inch depth, because those roads were already milled. They're already milled to a 2-inch depth, so we got to put 2 inches of hot mix back. There were some significant amount of binder repairs in that development, as we expected. But we could, you know, Gene and I talked about it today. At this point in time, I'm leaning towards hot mix in that development. And simply from a cost, this is Chatham Woods, hear me out. This is
nuts, Al.
So what we did discover is the entrance road is angular stone. It is crushed stone. The interior loop is a poorly graded sand and gravel subbase. With that being said, there's 38 homes in that development. It's very low traffic volume. Right now we're doing, this is the first maintenance we've done to those roads in 30 years. We got 30 years out of hot mix asphalt. I'm comfortable in saying, after seeing what the binder situation was there, and knowing the fact that we repaired binder that was inadequate, I think we can get another 25 or 30 years out of hot mix if we go that route.
But you are like so adamant.
I do. Like I said, after we got it milled off, we found. I expected that binder to be in much worse shape than it was. Mm-hmm. I would say approximately 10 to 15% of the binder needed repairs. I was expecting, once we milled that off, that I wouldn't have been comfortable putting hot mix over it at all, just by the condition the top course was in before we built it.
There's been a lot of discussion. I mean, the residents there were all upset that we were going to put They thought it was going to be chip sealed.
Yep, and even with one thing that's worth pointing out, even with the, because as Gene said last time we met, he's going to use a fiber micro sealant on that. Even with the fiber micro sealant, we are slightly lower with hot mix asphalt at this point in time, even at the 2-inch depth. So,
but you don't use the fiber micro.
You don't need to do that. You don't. You don't need to. Exactly. So if you look at the four roads that are, or five roads that are in there, below there's two shaded yellow blocks.
Yeah, that's a couple of thousand.
Yeah, it's a few thousand dollars difference to go to hot mix.
So what you're saying is the town of Lysander is hot mixing all of its roads this year.
At this point in time, that's what I'm leaning to. Until I get the results of that RFP back on Monday, I can't say 100% for sure, but I that's what I'm doing right now.
So
Gene and I discussed it earlier today. You know, that's where we're, like I said, I anticipated that binder to be in much worse condition than what we actually found once it was milled off.
We have sent a customer back.
Oh, okay, great.
Are those the only roads that have been milled so far?
Yes.
So there will be no more 2-inch millings?
No.
Okay.
No. So that's where we're at.
So you're going to get the bids in on Monday. What do we need to do? Anything?
At this point in time, nothing. I don't think we really need to do much of anything.
Just briefing the board.
Just bringing you guys up to speed and fulfilling Pete's request.
But if the bids come in supporting what you just said, that we can afford to pay for hot mix, you're going to just go ahead and do it. But if the bids come in strange, then do we have to make it?
We don't.
I'll put it to you this way. Gene just handed, and I can't speak about this currently, but Gene just handed me Seneca Stone's bid sheet. And it matches what they had previously proposed. So, at the very least, we know that those numbers are gonna hold. I don't want to say those publicly because it would be an unfair. It would be an unfair advantage. So I'd prefer to keep this.
Hold on. I would just throw my 2 cents in to assuage any fears that anybody might have. Seneca Stone is currently working for the school district, and they have been for the past couple of years. So they're not new to any county. And it's a 100-year-old company. If you're familiar with the Dalrymple family from Chemung, New York, they own Chemung Contracting. And 100 years, they did the built half of the Southern Tier Expressway. It's a huge company.
Right.
And the person in charge of the Seneca Stone operation is a Dalrymple, Jim Dalrymple, the youngest of the bunch, and he's a PE. He's not just a salesman, he's a PE. So I have complete confidence in what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely. That's good.
So I think...
Good price hunting.
The residents don't know that we're considering hot mix at this point, do they?
Nope, nobody's...
No, actually, a letter was written saying that it was going to be cold mix with a micro fiber finish, but that was probably before we had
this number. Either way, it's not a big deal.
I don't think they'll be disappointed by it.
They'll be back with what they have, except that we repaired the binder underneath and
mm-hmm.
the culvert.
That's great.
I have one other thing that we need to get through. I've got two things technically on Radisson Drainage District improvements. I've got a bunch of small projects. As long as the board's not opposed to it, I would like to bid those together and see what we get for numbers. And as a larger bid package rather than doing small projects under county bid, hopefully we can save a little money. I do have one larger project that I am recommending we do under county bid. They're doing the building renovation construction. That is Madeline Drive. We've got an undersized inlet because of how two pipes were connected. And that's one I would like to address with county bid.
we're in the $15,000 to $20,000 range to get that one done. There is money in the drainage district to do it.
It's in the
Well, we have drainage district funds adequately to more than adequate to do it, and it is one that I would like to do under county bid. It's something that we should move on sooner rather than later, just because of the condition. So as long as nobody's opposed to that, I'd like to get the contractor working on that in the next couple weeks.
Oh, fine.
Well, let's bid it first. Let's see what the numbers come in at.
Madeline Drive is to go through a full bid process. It's the one we had a foot and a half of water in the ladies' basement. I would prefer not to.
Well, I thought you said you were going to lump all these projects.
I am all the smaller projects. I am. This is a little bit larger. This is the bigger.
All right.
I've got a bunch of smaller stuff that I'm going to lump together. This is a bigger.
Okay, and you've got the money in there to do it.
We've got the money in there to do it. As long as the board's okay with it, I'd like to get the contractor moving on it in the next couple weeks.
Okay.
You want to do Collington Point East, or do you want to do Chickens? Let's hold on Collington Point East. Maybe I'll do a sketch of what I think
the concept
should be.
Yeah.
and send it to you guys.
I don't want to discuss it, but can you just tell me what it is we're going to discuss? What's
the
issue?
The restriction, maybe extending some lot lines and restricting use of those, but making them private property along Patchett Road, the parcels along Patchett Road, the smaller parcels along Patchett Road.
Is that our role, or is it in planning's hands at this point?
Well,
because of what we negotiated.
The LOI, because of the LOI, what was approved at the LOI, I think it needs to come in front of the...
To make sure we're comfortable with...
Town board to make sure you're comfortable.
So we'll do that next time, is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to do it.
Okay.
Thanks, Sam.
Yep. Sam.
Okay. So, Pete, you've kind of really grabbed hold of this issue and done some investigations. You want to brief the board on where we are and what you saw? Well, who you talked to, maybe?
Yeah. Recently, I talked to Mr. James and Mrs. James, and then I went across the street and I talked to Ms. Tosh. And basically, well, for starters, let me say that I'm a little uncomfortable being put in a position to have to legislate good neighborly behavior. I'm not sure that's our role. But there's definitely an issue going on here, and maybe these people could better explain their position as neighbors. But we've all been here. Chickens are apparently crossing the road, and Mr. James would like us to do something about it, and the people owning the chickens, I would suspect, would want to speak their side of the story as well. It has never been spoken in front of this board before. So
okay. So the parties are here. Mr. James, are chickens still coming onto your property since we last spoke?
They haven't lately, but that doesn't mean anything because I've been dealing with dogs and chickens and whatever. And I come to you guys. You got the authority to do something. Now, if you don't want to do it and stick your head in the sand. It's only the third time I've been here in 35 years. All I want is some teeth, and I know it's agricultural, but I don't think that's going to fly, but we might find out if we go to court. All I want is some reasonable regulations, so when I call the cops, I got some teeth to deal with these people that are flagrantly violating my property, whether it be dogs, chickens, pigs, whatever.
Okay.
Now, if you don't want to do that, all I'd like is a letter from you stating that. So I can move forward with what I told you I'm going to do, because I'm not going to bluff you.
Okay.
Let me, a point of clarification, correct me if I'm wrong. There's already regulations on the books about dogs running loose. You can't have a dog running loose. I mean,
that works, because it was on the books, I used that.
Okay, so dogs are not a problem. Besides chickens, are there other problems? You mentioned pigs?
You mentioned children.
Children?
Can you read the letter?
So,
Let me just caution the board on one thing. From a legal standpoint, it's not a very good idea to try to adopt legislation for a one-person issue.
Exactly.
And the reason is that you may take care of that problem, but you're going to create problems for everybody else. So before you do something like that, you want to take a look and say, what's the overall problems in the town? Frankly, I'm unaware of anything else. I've never heard this, but I've been here for 4 years.
I've never heard of another issue before either.
I haven't either. So, I mean, to try to legislate this one thing that really is a neighbor issue, I would urge you to give that great consideration before you do it. What? And it's also very difficult in terms of creating legislation that can be enforced. You know, you can just, it's nice to say you can't do this, but what are the ramifications of that? Who's going to enforce it? What happens if they violate it? You know, a fine structure, a fee structure, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. And to do that for the entire town when it really doesn't appear to be a problem for the entire town is problematic.
So according, if I misquote you, Mr. James, please let me know. According to Mr. James, he has had the police out there more than once, right?
About six times.
Okay.
One trooper twice.
Okay. And dogs we do have legislation for, so then people can do something about that.
That's right.
Poultry, we do not. Therefore, according to what you said, even though the authorities came to your residence, they said there's nothing on the books, so there's
that's
nothing.
Right.
They so said, they can, there's
no,
nothing.
You guys got nothing on the books. I don't have any teeth where I can do anything. Okay. So they suggest you vote me out. But like I said, I've talked to an attorney since then, and I believe, but don't quote me on the article number. It's in Article 38. Goes directly to the Supreme Court. And I assume you guys are dedicated. You can get there and testify to the judge. We can all testify why I need the law and why you go on to do the law.
There's no. Don't be concerned about a challenge in court.
Well, I'm not
concerned about that. You got your attorney there. If he's saying no, he can't, then maybe you should listen to him, and I'll go from there. Just tell me tonight that you're not going to do nothing, and I'd like it in writing.
Well, this is embarrassing to be trying to negotiate neighborly relations here, but I'm trying to remove myself from this particular instance. And I guess what I'm thinking to myself is, boy, people ought to be able to do the right thing. If I own a dog, I'm not going to let it run loose anywhere. And I did own, I owned several dogs, and they were always on my property. Except for maybe once it ended up on Jim Steruzin's property, but that was a long time ago.
Could you send me that? Did
you let you know?
That happened once.
Once!
And, still have the bell.
you know, again, just you have the bell. Anecdotally, my neighbor to the north has chickens. I think chickens must be the new fun thing to have. And I would just expect all my neighbors, and he does it. He keeps his chickens on his property, and you know he keeps them fenced in, and you know everybody's happy. When he first had his chickens, they came over and ate all my tomatoes. And I said, Scott, you got to do something about this because I depend on that crop. So I think, you know, neighbors ought to do the right thing. And the only curious thing about chickens, and I don't dare venture into like thinking that we ought to do legislation, boy, roosters can really make a racket. And we don't tolerate dogs barking or wouldn't expect to tolerate dogs barking incessantly, but roosters are an incredible animal.
Try peacocks.
What's that?
Try peacocks.
Yeah, so I don't want to make this a joke because I think it is serious, but I just wish people, you know, people ought to just do the right thing.
All right, so I guess to be clear, the board is not inclined to pass legislation specifically regarding chickens or poultry or fowl or... Okay. Thanks for your patience.
You'll be hearing from the attorney.
Okay.
Okay. We'll talk to him. We'll call him back. We'll bring him back.
What? So, what were you at? Was that?
We're done.
Oh, wow.
7 o'clock.
I'm going to leave more often.
Well, we didn't want to see it.
It's 7 o'clock.
All right, let's get ready for the regular meeting.
That was a lot. Oh my God! Amazing.
All right,
drag that out.
Hi, David. Yes. Thank you.
Here, David.